Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott in for Dan Gottlieb today. America is aging. About 12% of the country's population is over 65 years old, and that number is expected to grow to 21% by 2030. As the numbers increase, families and communities face many difficult questions around aging. How do we adjust to the changes age brings? What happens to our independence, to living our lives as we see fit? Can suburbia transform itself to support a growing aging population? What are our options when we're no longer able to care for ourselves? How can families start a conversation and plan to care for an elder? That's what we're talking about today. And joining me are Nancy Carman and Linda Coppell. Nancy Carman is Director of Geriatric Care Management for SeniorWise Care Management in New Jersey and has co-authored Recreating Neighborhoods for Successful Aging. Linda Coppell is Professor of Nursing at Villanova University. She's also a therapist and provides counseling for families. Nancy and Linda, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the older people in this country. What do we know about where do older people live? Are they aging in place? How many of them are in nursing homes, Nancy?
Well, the majority of older adults in America are aging in place, or it's now called aging in community. Less than 5%, about 4%, are actually in skilled nursing facilities. Most are cared for at home by families and friends.
And is that a trend that is growing, especially as the economy is struggling?
Yes, it is a trend that's growing. I see that more and more as a geriatric care manager. More and more people want to age in place at home. Sometimes it's more costly than they can afford to go into a assisted living or skilled nursing facility. So that seems to be the option of choice.
What are the biggest changes you've seen in terms of how we think about aging and how we age over the last decade? What are some of the big themes that have emerged?
Well, some of the big themes are that people are living healthier, they're living longer. The average life expectancy is 77.9 right now. For women, it's 80. For men, it's age 75. And we really expect that people are going to be living longer and healthier.
Linda, let me ask you, what are some of the biggest changes and trends you are seeing when it comes to aging?
I think one of the things that we see is the incorporation of the elderly members of the family into family in a variety of ways. The first would be family care. The second would be using their wisdom in taking care of the younger generation, so the grandchildren. And the other thing is that many families are using their resources to help their children, both financially, emotionally, and physically.
Now, we just mentioned some of the numbers. As we are getting older as a country, what do you think are some of the most important conversations we need to have as a society? What are the biggest issues, Linda?
I think the first issue has to look at how families are going to integrate the change. As the elderly need more services, as they need the support from the younger generation, from their children, how are those transitions going to take place in a positive and helpful way?
And Nancy, what do you think? What are some of the big topics that we face as a society?
I think some of the big topics that we face are who's going to provide the care, where is it going to be provided, and families really need to have those conversations early before a crisis emerges, just to have a casual conversation around the dinner table.
And we want you to join our conversation. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, our number here is 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about families and aging. What happens to family relationships? What happens when the power relationship changes, when the children have to take care of their parents, and how can we start talking about that? So give us a call and let us know what you're thinking about and maybe what's worked for your family. I want to talk a little bit, Nancy and Linda both, what do people want as they age? What are the things that are important to them? Do you want to start, Linda?
Absolutely. I'll be happy to start. I think one of the things that people want is to maintain their independence. And they also want to maintain, you know, as strong a health status as possible so they can continue to do the things that they've always loved to do, that often they've put off until their retirement or golden years to do. So those things come to mind. The other thing that I see in practice is that lots of times grandparents in particularly want to come to the aid of promoting family integrity. They want to be there for their grandchildren. They want to establish strong and healthy relationships. And they also delight in passing on their legacies to their both their children and then their grandchildren.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to add that, you know, the younger generation, despite what many people sometimes think, they are fascinated to have the stories of their grandparents' lives interpreted and reinterpreted. And as they get older, they value them even more because it begins to help them understand the context in which their family has learned to operate.
And Nancy, what do you think is important to people? Do you have anything to add to that list?
What's important to older adults, too, is that they don't want to be a burden to their children. I hear that so very many times as many of them are making plans. They're looking at how can I bring support services into the home, or how can I make the home age friendly, or do I want to live in a continuing care retirement community? So that takes that burden off of their children and grandchildren.
Now, Nancy, I met you actually because I interviewed your father when I did a report on older Americans and driving.
Right.
Your father is Walter Dow. He lives in a retirement community near Medford, New Jersey, with his fiancée, Pat Heller. And I went for a drive with your dad, Walter, and I asked him about his life and what he enjoys to do. So let's listen to that.
Get your seatbelt on, girls.
How long have you lived in this area?
We've been here 9 years. Pat has only been here 2 years. We both lost our spouses 2 years ago, and then we met here, and now we're going to make it legal.
So where do you typically go when you drive places?
Well, I go to Medford every day. I'm a volunteer in a St. Vincent de Paul Society, and so every day I'm over there. And
what do you do in your volunteer work?
Well, I'm in charge of the food pantry, and matter of fact, today we're giving out turkeys and food to folks over there at Medford. We got about 150 families that we'll be going to be giving Thanksgiving food and candies.
What do you enjoy about your volunteer work?
Well, there's a couple aspects to it. It's something for me to do, being retired. A lot of folks, when they retire, they sit around and wonder what they're going to do. And the other thing is the sociability of the people that work there. And the third thing, I guess, is that you're doing something for someone else.
Have you ever been bored since you were retired?
I really haven't. I can honestly say that I don't think I've ever been bored. It's always find something to do.
Thank you for the ride.
Well, you're welcome.
So that is your dad, Nancy.
Yes,
Walter
it is.
Dow. And he's a very happy man, and he has found a new partner after the death of your mother. Does his situation ever feel fragile? Does it feel like today it's good, but I don't know what tomorrow brings?
Yeah, and you know, I think about that. And, well, going back about 10 years, I had encouraged he and my mom to look at options for retirement, and they chose to move into a continuing care retirement community, and that was probably the best choice for them. And I think he's lived, you know, a healthy life, and she certainly, you know, had a good life there too. And he's found another partner, and I expect him to live, you know, healthier and happier for many more years.
And Linda, let me ask you, Walter talked about his volunteer work and that he enjoys doing things for other people, and he also enjoys just socializing. So talk about the role of staying engaged.
When people are engaged, they really have new meaning and purpose in their lives. They can take their life skills lots of times, and they can continue them in the society and the community where they work. I know when I went to graduate school many years ago, we had volunteers not only come into clinical facilities, but they were able to participate in research studies where they did infant massage to stimulate growth and development. And actually, the results of those studies, which are some 20 years old now, indicated that when these elderly people came in and they rocked the babies and they did infant stimulation and massage, that these kids really grew. Their parameters were going off the charts. So there's those kinds of things. We have lots of folks that are at the food banks that volunteer in a variety of both community and church organizations to do whatever it is. One of the things that came out of my work in my bereavement group was to have people then connect with other people so they could do things together. And by this simple pairing, they then ventured out together to volunteer in the community. So they provided rides for people who needed to go food shopping. They provided rides for people who had physician's appointments and dentist appointments and all kinds of things like that. And so people got great satisfaction out of doing those kinds of things. It really did help them to stay strong and vital.
Yeah, what happens on the other side? What happens to people's physical and mental health when they are isolated, when they don't have those connections? Linda, do you want to?
Yes. Sometimes what we find is that people begin to stress and to become anxious. And the sense of loneliness is a precursor for depression. So when they're isolated, they put themselves at great risk for loneliness and then greater risk for depression. And this, of course, happens when people don't have a sense of they can contribute, you know, to even just their circle where they live. It doesn't have to be, you know, large, important things, but we have people that go to the libraries and read stories. And I think that anything like that, people often will say to me, well, you know, I don't have a lot of skills to offer, but you do. You have yourself. And within you, there's a wealth of the different kinds of things that you use those skills to navigate through life.
We're going to take a short break. We're talking about families and aging and the kinds of conversations we should be having, especially maybe as we go into this holiday weekend when families get together. Our guests are Nancy Carman and Linda Coppell. Carman is Director of Geriatric Care Management for SeniorWise Care in New Jersey, and Linda Coppell is Professor of Nursing at Villanova University. Give us a call and join us with your questions and your comments at 1-888-477-9499. Maybe this is a topic that you hope to bring up as your family gets together for the holiday. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb today. You're listening to Voices in the Family here on WHYY-FM.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. Headquartered in Philadelphia, Independence Blue Cross is dedicated to the health and well-being of nearly 3 million people throughout the Delaware Valley. Independence Blue Cross now offers individual health insurance plans, including preventative care, emergency care, and prescription drug coverage. Further details available online at ibx4u.com. Independence Blue Cross, here for you every step of the way.
Trust your own ears.
I have no answers,
right,
but I have a lot of questions, and those questions have helped me to live better than any answers I might find.
Speaking of faith from American Public Media, religion, meaning, ideas. Sunday morning at 7 on WHYY.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about families and aging, some of the conversations we should have as we age. Our guests are Nancy Carman and Linda Coppell. Carman is Director of Geriatric Care Management for SeniorWise Care Management in New Jersey. She has co-authored Recreating Neighborhoods for Successful Aging. And Linda Coppell is Professor of Nursing at Villanova University. She's also a therapist and provides counseling for families. Now, I guess what happens in a lot of families is when we gather for a holiday, there are siblings maybe who are on site closer to the family, to the parents. There are other family members who come in from out of town. And all of a sudden, we might notice something. We might notice, oh, mom looks all of a sudden so much older, or what happened to my dad's driving? So what happens? What are some of the scenarios, Nancy, that you see?
Well, some of the scenarios I see are where the families come in for a holiday, like a Thanksgiving holiday, and you may have a relative who hasn't seen mom or dad for maybe 6 months or so, and they see a real decline or they're concerned. Where the siblings that are nearby, it might be a slow change and they don't notice it, so there may be a difference of opinion among the siblings about what's going on with mom or dad. So a lot of times those conversations happen over the holidays. And it's a good thing to have the conversation with the siblings, talking to each other, and then gently sitting down and talking with mom and dad about, you know, what are some of their concerns about aging? What are the challenges that they're having right now? And listen to what your parent has to say.
And Linda, is it difficult to start these conversations? Are people typically reluctant to even go there?
Well, people do tend to be reluctant to go there, but often you can start the conversation very, very softly by saying, I've noticed. And then you can state what you've noticed, perhaps that they're not as steady on their feet, or perhaps they're parked, you know, 4 feet from the curb, or they're partially on the grass in the driveway, things like that. And there's a tendency for people to make excuses and to minimize and sometimes even to deny that there's problems. But the thing that happens is that if people can do this in what I call a carefrontation, you do it with, you know, kindness, with gentleness, with love, and as Nancy just mentioned, listening, having them talk about, you know, what's going on, because that's often the key. The other key is that lots of times when these topics of conversation come up, people in the family, the different siblings, will have different opinions. And the people that are usually there with their parents on a day-to-day basis or see them quite frequently, they'll be more in touch with principles of what we call rehabilitation, where you encourage people to keep doing what they're doing. As long as they can do it and do it safely, then you encourage them. If indeed you need to start helping them to set limits, for example, we had just talked about driving. You know, car keys are a huge symbol of independence for all of us, actually. And so when you start to ask people about their driving or their parking or things like that, many times in families you can get them to have a conversation where people can begin just to subtly change their habits. So, for example, I had worked with a family not too long ago where they stopped asking the dad, but they started to provide ways that they could provide transportation. And they had more conversations. And this took several months before the father was actually able to say, well, I won't drive at night anymore.
So giving options. And actually, let's bring one of our callers in because we have April on the line, and she has a question about this very topic. Hello, April. You're on Voices in the Family.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My sister and I live fairly close to my parents, and they're both alive, and my father has had several series of serious medical conditions, and my mother is a caretaker, but we're challenged to develop those conversations with our parents, and I was wondering if there's any practical written text on helping to drive those conversations, because we're seeing, you know, the multiple complications of the, you know, the loneliness and the depression and the caretaking and trying to help them to make positive choices going forward.
And have you sat down with them and tried and it hasn't gone anywhere, or where are you right now in the process?
We have tried several times, and we have their unwillingness to maybe accept the fact that we want to be a part of that and we're not trying to control, but they might need to make some changes in their life. They live on a very large, you know, like a 3.5-acre property, and we're challenged to try and help them take care of that, as well as my father's, you know, going back and forth to the doctor and all of that. And so we're trying to help them change their lifestyle a bit to be more positive and get my father out into community, you know, to do more, because he is showing symptoms of depression and loneliness, so...
All right. Well, let's start with Nancy. I'm sure this is the kind of scenario you're faced with often in your work.
Yeah, I see it frequently. I think it's important to really research what the options are, the resources are in the community before you start that conversation with your parents, going to the Office on Aging, talking with a geriatric care manager. And then you have, you know, some like a arsenal of services that you can offer and gently provide and suggest to your parents to help, you know, help them to be more independent and to help them with what their needs are.
Linda?
I would agree, and I would just add that lots of times people need to be with other people who are experiencing some of the services, some of the social activities, some of the adult daycare activities, some of the different trips that are sponsored by a variety of organizations. I know in most communities, at the Y and at various church groups, there's places where people can get integrated with other people. And as they start to talk to these folks, they'll find that they have a lot in common, even some of the difficulties in common. And that's a good place to start those conversations. You're kind of a catalyst to those conversations.
And at this point, I do want to listen to, last week I interviewed Dr. Adam Davey. He studies aging at Temple University. And we talked about this, you know, how you can talk to your parents and try to guide their lives without seeming like you're taking over. And here are some of the issues he raised. Let's take a listen to that.
I know of a businessman who was trying to develop a business for older adults to help them become more compliant with taking all of their multiple medications on schedule. And the particular solution that he developed was one where medications would be placed in front of a video camera, and then adult children could monitor their parents taking the medications. They poured a lot of money into this model. They were really confident that it was going to be a great success, because right there you could see that mom or dad was taking his or her medications on time. Older parents were completely non-compliant with this. Why? Because it was an incredible invasion of privacy, and it completely undermined their autonomy. So I think that to the extent that families can come together with a strong sense of consensus and can come together with a variety of solutions from which parents might be able to voice their input. With the transition to institutional care, for example, there are small things that families can do that can help ease that transition, simply in terms of making sure that parents have a sense of choice and decision-making and feel involved and engaged in that process. If it's really necessary and really obvious that parents cannot continue to drive, then they really need to be presented with a variety of solutions. They really need to be provided with a range of options that can be tried and then evaluated, deciding on what is an appropriate time at which to check back in and see, how is this? How can we improve it? What isn't it meeting in terms of your own needs? Those are all things that can help.
So I guess giving options emerges as a big theme. But talk a little bit, maybe, Linda, about the power dynamic shifting. You know, when we as adult kids are worried about our parents, we're anxious. And sometimes we act the same way our parents acted when we were teenagers, when they didn't want us to go to the prom with, you know, Billy or whatever. So we take away the car keys and we say, you're not going. And but we don't tend to talk about that we're just anxious and we're scared and we're worried. Does it help to put the emotions on the table?
Yes, it does. It helps a great deal, because then people can feel that, you know, you're expressing what's in your heart and what you're most concerned about. And of course, people still have choice. They still have, you know, the ability to downplay what you're saying, etc. But certainly there are facts that can then gently be introduced, you know, the number of dents in the fender, so to speak, or other problems with maybe leaving things unlocked or wandering out at night and, having difficulty returning, driving in the dark, things like that. I think that the more support people are given, and the more sometimes we lead by example. So if people need transportation, you know, provide it. And in this day and age, lots of times grandchildren can even provide that transportation. If we start to talk about things and we present options and alternatives, people are at least likely to give it a try. And they'll tell you that, I'm only going to do this once for you, but that's okay, because you've got your foot in the door, and then you can have other conversations. And those conversations can talk about how you felt, that you felt safe and that you felt that they were cared for and taken care of, and that you weren't worried.
Nancy?
I think it's important to really approach that conversation from a strengths perspective with your parents and realize that they are your parents. Looking at what they can do, what's working for them, and then presenting options for things that aren't working in terms of, like we were talking about, the driving. You know, give them options and they can make a choice. Do they want to use, you know, taxi service, or are you going to provide that transportation, or grandchildren, or friends, or neighbors, or paratransit? So it gives them a sense of control. They have a choice over what's happening with their lives.
And Linda, in our the caller, April, she mentioned that her father had several medical issues and very severe medical issues. So if you're talking to the spouse there, to April's mother, she's probably also just really worried about what's going on with her husband and the potential of losing her husband. So that makes it even more difficult, I would think.
Yes, when people see that the ones that they love are declining, and they're often struggling to maintain their integrity and also to keep themselves in a well position so that they can be in the role of caretaker, it's almost a double whammy. It's important that the caregiver has lots of support, and that may be a variety of things, whether it's bringing people into the home, home health care, whether it's making sure that when people go to health care facilities that they're seeing the appropriate providers so that you can address individual problems. And, you know, use of social workers, counselors, therapists, whatever it takes to make sure that there's a team and that people are getting, you know, the best support they can for the issues that they have.
Let's get another caller in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Sharon on the phone. Hi, Sharon. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
It's great to hear this conversation. I'm involved with an organization called Seniors Helping Seniors, where we actually utilize the help of one senior, a more active adult, to come in and help those less active adults in their home. And what we found is the relationship and bond that forms is good for both parties, and everyone's gaining from it. And so we're providing that sense of belonging and sense of being needed and wanted and appreciated to those people who are helping others. And we also, to kind of get at the issue of, you know, people being reluctant to take help, they realize that they're also helping someone who needed that social connection with someone. And so it's a good way to approach people with the sense of, you know, you're not just taking help here, you're also helping someone that just needs some social connection or maybe needs a little extra income.
And where is your organization?
Well, it is a national-wide organization within the past 3 years, so there are spread out all over the country. We're still looking for more people to open centers, but there are some in the Philadelphia area. There are some all over the country.
Great. And how can people find you, Sharon?
Our website is www.seniorshelpingseniors.com, and that's the best way to locate a location nearest to you.
Great. Thank you so much for your call. And if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. And Nancy Carman, let me ask you, when a family embarks on this journey looking for options, looking for care, looking for help, is there some kind of clearinghouse for information? Is there a good place to start looking for resources?
Well, there are a couple of good places to start. One is every county has a local office on aging, and they can contact there and get information in terms of housing, programs, different things, chore services, Meals on Wheels. It's a treasure trove of information and help. And another resource is geriatric care managers, and there's a National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers, which is on the web. And if a family is needing a more intensive interaction with a professional who can actually come into the home, do an assessment, and work with the family and that frail older adult on an ongoing basis and helping guide them through the long-term care process and really laying out a care plan or a map for them, that's available too.
And we'll also put some resources on our website at whyy.org/voices, so you can go there after the show and take a look what we have posted there. Now, I want to talk about distance. A lot of times your parents are not close by. So how does that tend to complicate the equation? Do you want to start, Nancy?
More and more families, the adult children are living out of the area or out of the state or out of the country. And it makes it difficult because sometimes it's hard for them to get a handle on what's going on with mom and dad at home. And when they do come home, you know, the parents may be able to rally and pull it together and things are okay. And then they get phone calls from neighbors or, you know, other concerned individuals. So that's where many times a geriatric care manager is of value. They can really function as a surrogate family member, helping to make sure mom and dad are safe and doing well, or if their placement is needed, they can help facilitate that.
And Linda, how does that play out in family relationships? Oftentimes we have one sibling who is close by who then tends to assume most of the responsibility. Talk a little bit about that dynamic.
When you have one child that's in a caregiver role, they're usually elected. And one of the difficulties is that often people think that they're doing the job so well, or that the parents prefer them, or parent prefers them, that they don't even offer help. They don't offer to become substitute caregivers or substitute helpers. And that can be very frustrating and lead to overload and certainly burnout in its ultimate stages for families. The other thing that often happens is that people, when they are brought into the conversation, they don't seem at first to get it. People often say, well, you're doing such a good job with mom, I didn't think you needed help. And so it really behooves the caregiver to ask for breaks and respites and to really become more of a case manager, to organize and incorporate others in the care. Because most of the time, people are willing. They just don't volunteer and they just don't think about it because they're busy with their children and their professional lives and et cetera. So it's important, again, for the caregiver to have the conversation. One of the things that brings people to counseling, which is very sad but true, is that sometimes there's a sense of unfairness that occurs. Lots of times the caregiver will institute counseling simply because not only are they caring for the person, but they think that there's going to be extra benefits. They think that there's going to be extra added attention and love and appreciation. And sometimes that doesn't occur. And what they see occur sometimes is that the elderly, although they're being cared for, or sometimes even living with a particular person, they spend a lot of their time talking about their other children, and particularly the child that they perceive that has needs or problems. And this becomes a double whammy because lots of times the sibling then feels like not only am I taking care of the parents, but I also need to support the parents into taking care of their sibling that's in need. So that's a real issue that comes up in counseling.
Nancy?
One of the things that I really talk with the adult children, especially ones that are the full-time caregivers, is that they need respite. They need that break, whether it's a few hours or a weekend or a week away, and that we really try to figure out how they can get that break. Otherwise, they're at risk for caregiver burnout, which is very real.
And how can you divvy up the tasks? I remember a couple of years back we had a conversation on this issue, and one of our guests said, you know, if you can't do one thing, if you don't feel like you can bathe your mother or you can do those things, what can you do? What are the tasks that you feel comfortable with? So talk a little bit about sharing the different tasks and then breaking that up so there is respite for the caregiver.
Yeah, and many times with siblings, you have siblings that are out of town, you know, the sibling that is the full-time caregiver, you know, can ask the one out of town, could you come in? Could you stay for a weekend or a few days so I can get away and get a much-needed vacation? Or the out-of-town child can take care of the finances or do some of the planning long distance to help out that overburdened caregiver that's right there on site. There are also resources in terms of home health care agencies that can provide a healthcare worker to come in and to provide that bathing if the family caregiver is uncomfortable doing that. So there are resources to take on those activities.
And Linda, I wanted to talk also about the issue of relocating for older folks. If your parents, let's say, live in Florida and you feel like I really need to bring them back here, or if they cannot live in their home anymore and you feel like they have to move somewhere else, what are some of the issues that come up around that? I know one of the women I interviewed for this show, she said, you know, I want to stay here. This is the house where I raised my children. This is my home. And that really rang true to me because I understood why she didn't want to go. So what are some of those issues?
Well, it would be optimal if the person could stay in their home environment. And I think lots of times families work very hard to do that. Many times it's a team approach and a community approach that provides them with the support. And then there comes a time, and usually it's because of illness, although not always, but someone will fall and break a hip. Someone will have their congestive heart failure so compromised at this point that they really cannot be alone, and you find that they can't do the usual things, even making meals and things like that. So when you talk to people about that, lots of times people feel very comfortable if they can stay in the community. So to know your resources, as Nancy was talking about earlier, know the resources that are available in the community and start to talk about those things. And in fact, one of the things that is interesting and happening is that people are often having the elderly parent visit an assisted living facility and look at some senior housing and to see what is around. And even though, you know, they're not in the perhaps the place to make plans at that point in time, to let them know what's in the community, because living in your community still allows you to have contact with the social organizations and oftentimes the people that you've come to, you know, live your lives with.
Nancy, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, I agree that it's important that, you know, you look and see what the options are and take your older loved one and visit, you know, where it's a non-crisis moment. It's no pressure. Just go see what's out there. And they may be pleasantly surprised when they do visit assisted living communities as to what it's like.
Let's get another caller on the line at 1-888-477-9499. We have Wynn on the phone. Hello, you're on Voices in the Family.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I have a mother who is suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's type, and obviously before diagnosis, we were dealing with things in much the same way your guests have been advising families to. However, that diagnosis changes everything, as I'm sure they're aware. Perhaps they could talk a little bit about options for families facing Alzheimer's or any form of dementia, and particularly the necessity for getting good evaluation and medical advice.
Nancy, do you want to start with that?
Sure. And I think it's really important to start with getting good medical advice in terms of getting a memory assessment or a dementia assessment with a neurologist or a memory assessment program to find out, you know, what you're working, what you're dealing with, what's coming down the road, and then making plans ahead in terms of financial planning, legal planning, and ultimately looking at residential planning, where that person's going to live as the disease progresses.
And Linda, anything to add to that?
I would just like to add that geriatric nurse practitioners have taken on a vital role in terms of providing the care. And because these practitioners are available to families, they're not only looking at the individual, but they're also providing family care to help explain and translate the nuances and what these declines in functioning often mean and what people can expect. So there's another source for people to be aware of.
And Linda, how do families pay for these types of services?
For geriatric nurse practitioners, they do accept health insurance, particularly Medicare and Medicaid, and to ask providers. And in many physicians' offices, lots of times they're geriatricians that have a staff of certified nurse practitioners that will follow the folks. And they've often been known to make home visits and to spend a great deal of time educating the family. So there's a lot of vehicles for people to use, but certainly insurance does apply here when you're getting care from a nurse practitioner.
We have to take a short break. We're talking about families and aging. Our guests are Nancy Carman and Linda Coppell. Nancy Carman is Director of Geriatric Care Management for Senior Wise Care Management in New Jersey, and Linda Coppell is Professor of Nursing at Villanova University. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb today. You're listening to Voices in the Family here on WHYY.
Support for WHYY is provided by the Philadelphia Foundation. For 91 years, helping generous people throughout southeastern Pennsylvania support the region's nonprofits. The Foundation's Generous Philadelphia campaign helps make a difference in tough times for the most needy, generating support for the basic human needs of food, housing, transportation, heat, and light. Full details on how to join in are available online at philafound.org.
To screen or not to screen? That's the question facing women receiving conflicting advice on when they should start undergoing mammograms. An independent panel now says women should delay the annual tests until age 50. But many doctors and breast cancer survivors insist it should remain age 40. We'll hear personal stories and more debate about this complex issue next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about families and aging. Our guests are Nancy Carman. She's Director of Geriatric Care Management for Senior Wise Care Management in New Jersey, and Linda Coppell, Professor of Nursing at Villanova University. Let's get another call in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Hannah on the phone. Hello, Hannah. You're on Voices in the Family.
Oh, thank you so much. This conversation is so timely. My mother is 85 years old. She's incredibly independent, very smart, but she's definitely getting older, harder for her to get around, to move around. The one unfortunate thing is there are six of us children, and she is resistant to any help whatsoever, anything at all, so much so that she's moved to Arizona. The rest of us are on the East Coast, so she has her very, you know, sassy attitude, but the bottom line is, we are concerned as she gets older, and she absolutely is resistant to any information. I really don't know what to do, so I'm hoping you can help me.
Who wants to start?
Well, I'll start. Yeah. One of the first things I would say is, when you have some time, go out to Arizona and do a community assessment with elderly services in mind, because you'll be prepared, and being proactive is certainly important. And she sounds like the kind of person that, if you have the information, you can just have a good conversation with her. And lots of times, people that are somewhat convinced that they can do it their way are still receptive to education and information. And so having that information is extremely available. The other thing which is very helpful, which I don't believe we've mentioned, is sometimes making contact with people in the community and neighbors, so that you know how to be contacted if indeed anything should ever happen, or perhaps someone should be dealing with your mother on an issue, and they would say to her, gee, you know, it would be interesting if you called your children and talked about this. And they can encourage them if they know your name. They can say, you know, call Linda and, you know, talk about such and such. So becoming part of that community, even though you're doing the distance, is important.
And Nancy, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I wanted to getting the resources out there, knowing what's available, making available to your mom is excellent. Also, would be a good idea, if you're all on the East Coast here, is to find out what the resources are in your towns, in the event that your mom would suddenly decide that she wanted to move back to the East Coast, or decline to a point where you would want to bring her closer to you. So you can do that simultaneously.
But well, I appreciate it. I hadn't considered the neighbor aspect of it, but that's a very good, it gives me some hope. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your call, Hannah. And, you know, the call, Hannah brings up an important issue. And I think one of the things is, we don't like to think about our own aging. We don't like to think about our parents' aging. It's just something we don't like to think about. And I think our next caller, Veronica, she's been hanging on for quite some time. I think that's something she wants to bring up. So let's go to Veronica. Hello, you're on Voices.
Hi, thank you so much. This is a wonderful conversation. Yes, I think my experience has been that I started having these kinds of responsibilities when I was in my 30s, and I didn't have the benefit of the kind of information and the knowledge that we have today. And I had a level of superiority towards those seniors that I really regret. Today. They have transitioned since then, but I have the great fortune of having other seniors today now that I'm more mature. And what I'm aware of is when I am dealing with them, because everyone is an individual, everyone has a different way in which they handle this, is that I try to always remember, this is going to happen to me, if I'm lucky, if I live long enough. This is going to happen to me. How would I want to be approached? How would I like to be talked to? So that's just another aspect of it. I'm so glad that you're bringing up this subject, and I can take my anything you say off of the air. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Veronica. And since you just called on this issue, I do want us to hear a very short clip. I did interview recently Brian Duke. He is director of the Bucks County Area Agency on Aging, and I talked to him about issues of mobility. And since Brian is you know, coming somewhat slowly closer toward retirement age, I said to Brian, well, do you and your friends talk about this topic? So let's listen to his answer.
I don't talk about it with my own friends, and perhaps I should, as a professional in the field of aging, perhaps I should. Yeah, thanks.
So it was a very typical answer, and it made both of us laugh because, you know, we can think about this a lot, but then it's hard to envision it happening to you. So, Nancy, what are some of the issues we're all avoiding?
I think some very basic issues that we all avoid are things that getting our legal documents in place, like advance directives for healthcare and finances, a simple will. I mean, those are things that we can do. Having the conversation, doing the what ifs. What if I'm not able to get up and down those stairs? What if I'm not able to drive the car? And just have the conversations casually. You know, my husband and I have those conversations many times. You know, what if we're not able to live in this house? Where would we go? And being painfully aware of it as a gerontologist and a geriatric care manager, we do have those conversations. But to have them when it's relaxed and casual rather than crisis-driven.
Linda, anything to add to that?
The only thing I would add is that lots of times there's family conflicts, and so they need to be healed. And if there's family cutoffs, or if there's losses that have yet been unmourned, things like that are important. And it's amazing to me how elderly people do want to finish well. And so the ideas of empowering them to do that and also helping them to heal and to forgive is important, and we always have to remember that we're not forgiving somebody else. We're forgiving so that we can lift the burden off of ourselves that we've been carrying for a while.
And I would think one of the issues we're facing as a society is that we have a very large group of elders emerging, but not a whole lot of kids to take care of them. So what are we looking at in that regard?
We were looking at about 78 million baby boomers who are aging and looking at, you know, who's going to be caring for them. And we have fewer children, fewer caregivers. So, you know, we need to look at how is that care going to be provided for us? I'm one of those 78 million baby boomers. The good news is that we're living longer, we're living healthier. So, yeah, even just planning, and that's where our communities are planning in terms of aging, what I call aging in community.
And speaking of community, what makes a good place to live? What are some of the things I should look at if I'm trying to pick where am I going to live, which is the next house I'm going into? For example, I have a good friend, she's 65. She moved into a five-floor, like a walk-up on the fifth floor when she was 65, and I thought, that's not a great idea. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things you should look into?
Well, I'm looking at, you know, what's a house that's going to support me as I age in place, looking at no stairs, zero entry doorways where you don't have to go upstairs. It's all level. Looking at, in terms of width of doorways, if you need to have a wheelchair walker at some future date, will it go through those doorways? The bathrooms, are they big enough to accommodate assistive devices? Are there grab bars? The lighting is critical in terms of the older eye. Is there enough light coming coming in? How is the lighting provided? Universal design is a real good guideline in terms of accessibility for people of all ages and all abilities.
What about the community around you? What should be there?
Yeah, in terms of the community around you, looking at how far are you from the town center in terms of food shopping, department stores, gas stations, how accessible is it? Is there public transportation? Looking at sidewalks, streets, lighting. Does a community work for an aging population?
And Linda, what are some of the issues you think families and people should look at as they age? What are the social connections that should be in place and so on?
Well, there certainly should be places where seniors feel welcome, whether that be at the Y to exercise, whether that be at the local churches, whether that be places to volunteer. There's so many things that are useful for the elderly to have access to. When I think of the number of elderly that go to the Y and that do their water aerobics and things like that for their arthritis, I think, you know, are those things that people are going to look at. The other thing that's interesting, and Nancy did a wonderful job of covering things, but something that I hear every once in a while is people are hesitant to move because many of these places do not allow pets. And pets are extremely important because after all the children have moved out and established families of their own, lots of times people still have those pets to keep themselves vital and to have companionship. So it's more frequently than not that you hear people say, I'm not going to move right now because I can't bring my pet with me.
Yet another thing to think about. So as families get around the Thanksgiving table, hopefully they can get this conversation started. I want to thank both of you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us.
It was great being here. Thank you.
My guests today have been Nancy Carman and Linda Coppell. Carman is Director of Geriatric Care Management for SeniorWise and has co-authored Recreating Neighborhoods for Successful Aging. Linda Coppell is Professor of Nursing at Villanova University. Please also join us tomorrow as we continue this conversation online. Our web chat on families and aging is tomorrow, Tuesday, November 24th, from 12 noon to 1 p.m. We'll have experts on hand to answer your questions about aging, to talk about solutions and family relationships. For more information and to log on, visit whyy.org/health science. Our next Voices in the Family program will be about cultivating gratitude. If you have a question, show idea, or comment, please email us at voices@whyy.org. You can listen to archive editions of Voices in the Family on our website, whyy.org/voices, and you can also find resources for today's show there. You can reach Dr. Gottlieb directly at drdangottlieb@aol.com. The engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content at WHYY. Voices in the Family is produced by Gita Simons. Our intern is Jonathan Click. I'm Mike and Scott, behavioral health reporter for WHYY. Thank you for listening.
You have been in.